Hey, what up, Long Beach? Welcome back to another episode of our weekly podcast here at your home for everything local sports. I am JJ Fiddler, and across the table, my co-host Mike Artabasio.
What's up, guys? We're doing our weekly sports show down here at the Long Beach Post as part of our partnership with them. We've also got our weekly big high school and college roundups you can check out at lbpost.com. And we got big news. We mentioned last week we're dropping our first ever merchandise. We have had a ton of people come through and order those hats. So if you haven't gone to patreon.com/the562 to sign up as a subscriber and order your hat, do so today.
You've seen us wearing these hats around the city. Many people have asked us how to get them. So here it is, y'all. The hats are available right now. This is a limited run. We're only going to make these hats available for a little bit. So if you're an OG, an original subscriber, an original gangster,
OS.
you'll be able to get on and get this lid. But they're not going to be available forever, so you got to do it right now. Because eventually, we're going to have other merch. We're going to do shirts, we'll do sweatpants, stuff like that, cool stuff, What Up Long Beach stuff. But right now, the hats are what it is, and they're not going to be here forever. So make sure you get on it, get on the website, and subscribe to get your lid. Shout out to Name Your Game for helping us get that stuff done. On this episode of What Up Long Beach, we are going to bring on our old friend Jason Ruiz to talk about his very forgettable sports weekend. And we're also doing our O the Week segment. Everything from Moore League to Long Beach State and Long Beach City.
We are recording this on the day that Game 5 is being played, and I know that I am very nervous.
I live nervous at this point with the Dodgers. Nervous all the time.
The best thing to do when you're feeling that nervous is to go be around other fans who feel the same way that you are. Get out of your house. I know it's tempting to just lie there comatose on the couch, but I've got to get down to Naples Rib Company. Belly up to the bar. Plenty of places, obviously, where you can see the game from. One of the things I love about Naples Rib Company, you can sit around the bar, still get a nice booth, still get a nice table, get your dine-in experience if you don't want to just stand up at the bar the whole time, and find out what happens with the Dodgers.
It's time again for our O the Week segment. Questions, athletes, players, games, quotes, and our list. We start with the question O the Week. It's been about football for the last few weeks, and since the big game was on Friday, that Paulie Wilson game that you could check out the coverage of at the562.org. We're kind of moving on to other stuff because these other Moore League sports are coming down to the stretch run, and they're all very close. We've got a top four situation in the Moore League for girls volleyball that's closer than, I don't know, maybe 10 years, for the last 10 years. We mentioned the cross-country meet that we covered last week. Paulie won the boys and girls each by a single point over Milliken and Wilson, respectively. And all of the other leagues, like the golfing is closer, tennis is closer. Those individual tournaments for golf and tennis in the Moore League, it's really anybody's game. And I don't remember when it's happened, and people have been asking us about it. Why is it this way? I think there's probably a couple reasons why. You know, the level of quality of athlete is not a straight line. It kind of moves and, you know, ebb and flow. And I think a lot of the programs that were getting the elite athletes here in Long Beach without question, like, oh, well, if you're a blank player, then you go to blank school and that's just the end of it.
Right.
That's not the case anymore. And that's kind of leveling the playing field here in the city.
I think it's, and I do think that up and down cyclical nature to me is exactly what it is. Because a couple years ago, you know, we're getting the question, well, why is Moore League boys water polo closer than it's been in a while? But, you know, suddenly you've got Paulie and Milliken thinking they've got a chance to beat Wilson, which had obviously been a historic power. Well, this year, Wilson does not look particularly touchable, right? Because that cycle turned over. Okay, the next generation of superstars comes in. I think similarly, this was a year where people might have seen in Paulie football, okay, maybe this is a year people can get to him, because now they've got these teams that have beaten the, you know, Wilson and Milliken pretty easily. Well, all those guys are going to be back next year, you know? So I think some of that is just turnover. Like, we might see Wilson golf, Paulie tennis, Wilson tennis, or whatever, get in that next freshman superstar next year, and suddenly it doesn't take that many kids to make you, you know, an elite program, especially when we're not talking about football or baseball. We're talking about a sport where one person can make a huge difference.
And we talked about it when the CIF went to playoff equity, how it's basically going to save Long Beach sports, where it's going to give these other programs and these other schools a chance to be playing for something past halfway through the season.
Right.
When in the past it was, well, we're all in Division I because Paulie football or Wilson Water Polo is Division One. So now here we are. And now that's not the case. Now other teams have stuff to play for later in the season, even if they're not playing for the league title. And I think that's given programs positive momentum to where when they come into the next season after maybe winning a playoff game, things feel a little bit different. Things feel more positive.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, like, so we just look at the teams we mentioned so far. So you take Poly Football. Okay, Poly Football, not ranked in Division One, but they are up in that Division One 2 thing. So in previous years, that would have pulled everyone up there. Instead, Wilson's ranked, right? Wilson's got a very good chance to win that Division 7 yeah. bracket. Similarly, you look at girls volleyball. Poly and Lakewood are going to play for a league championship next week, but Wilson and Milliken have both been ranked in CIF. Those are things that we hadn't seen before. And like you said, it makes for water polo. Getting in is a huge deal because if you're Milliken, Poly, Lakewood, you know, Cabrillo, whatever, whoever it is, you can win games in the divisions that you're in as opposed to, well, who really cares who finishes third or fourth place? You're just adding one more game. But now for football, I mean, look, I think you and I feel pretty solid about Poly right now, obviously, is in the driver's seat, even though technically tied with Lakewood for first.
Right.
And then Wilson behind them. But then that Milliken, Lakewood, Jordan,
yeah, they're alive.
Those teams do still have life based yeah. on the way the next 4 weeks go, and any one of those teams is capable of winning games in the playoffs in the divisions that they're in.
Make sure you watch the show this week where Mike and I are going to be breaking down the playoff percentages, the possibilities of these more league teams making the postseason and making some noise. That show, the show, is available every week at Long Beach Post. We move on to our Athletes of the Week. Obviously, congratulations to all these winners from high school and college, and thanks to Naples Rib Company for their sponsorship. The top two for our Athletes of the Week were pretty obvious because if you win a more league cross-country event, you usually get an AOT dub nod.
Because it's like, imagine if you go to a football game and someone is just like, this person's team and this person won the football game. Like
while playing the other six teams from right. the league somehow?
Yeah, so Camille Lindsay, the freshman, and Ronan McMahon Staggs, the senior at Long Beach Poly, both were the individual winners. That is, to be honest with you, just based on times, that's certainly what we expected and don't necessarily expect it to change that much going forward. They did also lead their teams to win with their great runs. And Camille Lindsay, boy, what a bright future. 17:49 for a PR over 3 miles in her first race as a ninth grader. That's pretty special.
She did not look like she was struggling. The whole race, she looked like she was in complete control. And it's almost more difficult. I'm not saying this because I'm an elite runner, but it's almost more difficult to run quickly when you're not being chased. She was a good 30 seconds in front of the field after the first lap.
No, I think that's exactly it. And I think that shows you the experience level that she's got in order to know the time she's pushing for. Because people say that all the time, like the Poly Wilson track coaches that coach the sprinters, they always say, like, you're always going to get your PR at state or at Arcadia where you're running. It's never going to be a dual meet with a team that doesn't belong there with you because the human brain is what the human brain is. If someone's right next to you, it's going to give you that extra 1% to yeah. try and push you a little harder.
We're all Seabiscuit. You're absolutely right. I was hanging out with some friends the other weekend, and I was trying to explain to them how track coaches prepare track athletes to run it their best time at a certain time, and how there was that great story. I forget who it was. She was like, oh, I want to go run in this all-star thing. And her coach was like, that's fine, but you're not going to run as fast because right. I trained you for
you're
this weekend.
At state.
That trying to explain that to somebody who doesn't really understand sports is right. like trying to explain sleep to an alien.
Well, I appreciated that you put that in your coverage of the Morley cross country meet that because to be honest with you, so Poly was missing their third runner due to illness, but looking at their time, I was surprised because they did not run one of their better times. But you put in the story, you go, this was a really heavy training week because the taper's starting after this.
Yep.
So this is now you'll start to see those times drop. But it was definitely like, well, I have to say, Poly's number five in Division One. I did not expect that to be a 1-point win for them. Yeah. But Wilson had a great meet. Poly had obviously heavy legs based on the times that those kids ran.
Yep.
And those are things that good coaches think about.
They just went out and ran head-to-head. They just picked somebody
just
else
up,
from
right.
Wilson and was just like, just beat that
old
guy.
Old school style, straight up. Like
running strategy, dude. It's fascinating. I love it.
Mike Filippo, the head coach over there, has a term I love. He says, once we get to league season, we're racing jerseys. You're like, you're not racing. Like, yes, there's days where you're racing times, you're trying to do all this stuff, but then you get to a league meet, you want to win, you're looking for the jersey, you track down the jersey, you beat that jersey, you win the race.
Same colors for our volleyball representative this week, green and gold. Riley McGinnis is maybe the best natural middle we've seen in girls volleyball here in
the Moore League in our time. Yeah. I would absolutely say so. I just think that she's got such a great timing on the block. And it's hard when you have someone that's athletic as she is playing the middle, because if she were playing outside or right side, she would swing 30 times a match.
Yeah, and it's almost like watching a football player be a really good receiver for their 7-on-7 team, and then when they play for their high school team, they have to play left guard.
Yes.
And you're just like, wow, that's the greatest left guard I've ever seen. But you know they're sacrificing for their team.
Or they're a great running back, but they have to play receiver for their team. But then it's like, well, now you need the line to block well enough. Mm-hmm. You need the quarterback to throw the ball well enough to make them effective. Because it's harder to set the middle. You have to get a good pass, and you have to have a good setter. So she does not see the ball as much as she would, but she's playing her college position, and she definitely balled out last week against Wilson. She had 8 kills with no errors on 11 swings, which is a 727 hitting percentage. She also had 4 blocks in the match. So she had the most kills and the most blocks as a middle. Most blocks you see from middles, you don't usually see most kills in a match from a middle.
No, definitely not. I would love to see her hitting percentage on the season. I would love to see that number, because I'm betting it's probably close. It's 72.
It's high, yeah. She definitely does not hit the ball out very often. Here's something I wanted to bring up. So Riley McGinnis is Willie McGinnis' daughter. And her freshman year last year, I basically put that fact every time I mentioned her. And my philosophy was, I'm going to do this her freshman year, because I know when someone sees a great baller at Long Beach Poly named McGinnis, that's the first question.
Somebody
they ask.
Still asked on the comments on the Instagram post. That
so,
we did.
Yes. And they people ask it still on not Facebook. Sure. Yeah. They text me. Well, because people don't see this stuff unless you're right. So what I decided to do this year, and I told her this, I said, look, your first year here, I'm just going to put this. So hopefully we spread the word and then people aren't bugging me and you about it all the time. And then her sophomore year, I think I mentioned it in the preview, and then that's it.
Yeah.
But but every time I don't mention it, I get the question. So,
yep.
But I also don't want her for 4 years, as she's potentially an All-American caliber player herself.
That's
being
completely
fair. Oh, that's your dad. You know what I mean?
That's completely fair. At this point, he's 22. At so many matches while still being on TV a lot.
Yeah.
That it is kind of like, not old hat, but like, it's like, oh, yeah, there's, you know, the Poly dads who stand in the corner.
Right. Yeah.
It's one of them just happens to be one of the greatest football linebackers of all time.
Right. Speaking of football, we've got 3 football athletes of the week, as we usually do. Mekhi Jordan, the Long Beach Poly quarterback. Pretty easy choice after going 18 of 27 for 362 yards and 5 touchdowns against Wilson last week. He definitely looked like a guy that can take them some places in that game.
Yeah, he looked really confident. And it has been a while since we've said that about a Long Beach Poly football quarterback.
For sure. He was throwing. I mean, he was planning, throwing.
A couple of those throws, the wheel route that I got a really good shot of just because I happened to be standing in the right spot. And then the throw, the first touchdown throw, back shoulder on the sideline. Those were dimes, dude.
Yes, great throws. 2 other guys, James Voorhees at Lakewood.
For all the little angry white running backs out there, James freaking Voorhees, dude.
93 yards for a touchdown on his first carry of the night. Ended up with 22 for 218 in a 26-20 win over Milliken. That definitely has us talking now about the standings, because we're going to get that Wilson-Lakewood game next week.
That's why we're talking about it on the show this week.
Yeah,
is because
for sure.
Lakewood made it a thing, and Voorhees basically gave Lakewood that momentum with a 90-plus yard touchdown run with 2 ridiculous cutbacks.
Yes.
Shout out to Matt Simon, too. He's one of our freelancers who covers mostly football for us. He got some great video of that game, and he put together a little clip of like a couple of Voorhees' runs from Friday. You got to see this, man.
He's learning.
This kid is just... Voorhees is just like, when you watch him, he's the ultimate small but mighty, right? You just want him to do well because he's about half the size of everybody else on the field. It's the ultimate underdog story because he's under everyone else.
Yes, he's super fun to watch, and I genuinely regret that the next time I'm going to see him will be when he plays against Poly. Because typically those running backs don't have fun nights, obviously,
you know what?
Against the Poly defense.
In his defense, or you know, to his credit, he has played very good defenses this year, not as good as Poly, but like CDM is probably going to go to their championship game, and he ran up against that defense all 4 quarters.
Yeah.
Just did not stop. And I think there's a long list of very good more league running backs who had great seasons, who didn't really play well or, you know, statistically well against Poly, but like get their name out there and maybe get their name on a couple, you know, possible scholarship lists because of a performance against that Jackrabbit D.
Our other football athlete of the week, Jacob Smith from Jordan, better known by his nickname Texas, scored two touchdowns in the second half after Jordan was trailing 13-0 at halftime of their homecoming game. He put them up 14-13. They ended up winning 20-13 against a Compton team that was shorthanded due to some ejections in their Wilson game. But that was big time for Jordan. It was their first Moore League win in 3 years, and they got to do it in front of a homecoming crowd.
That was a massive moment for Jordan football. I was telling Coach Tim Wedlow all summer, you guys are going to get a break.
Right.
Things have been going against you for years. You lose your best player before the season even starts this year because of an injury. So many things were going wrong, and I just looked at him. I was like, you guys are going to get a break, man. Something good is going to happen this year. And I am so thrilled that they finally got that moment over there in J-Town because they deserve it. I am very bummed for the Compton because, you know, this is kind of basically the end of their run this year. Right. But I'm also very bummed that we weren't there.
Yeah,
like, there were
sure.
three incredible football games this last weekend.
And there literally might not be another one for the rest of the season.
I know. And I just feel like that's another great example of, like, the reason why we need support at the562.org. is because we could have more guys out there covering games.
Yes.
Got guys like Matt Simon. We've got guys like AC. We've got dudes like Steven Dockman who have given their time to try to help us build this thing. And it's time to get those guys back and put those guys out on the field as much as possible. And we need subscribers to do that. So we hopefully in the future would always have a person covering that Compton-Jordan game.
100%. Speaking of guys that you always want to cover, you know, I genuinely enjoy covering junior college football. It is a massive undertaking because the games are 4 hours long. They always happen on Saturdays right after we've been beat over the head by high school football night.
It's that extra 3 minutes on every quarter. Just adds up.
And the fact that every team throws the ball 70 times a game.
Also true. Clock stops on first downs. It's rough.
Listen, it'll take a toll on you for sure. But one of the guys that you definitely want to go and see is DeAnthony Jones, who is playing for LBCC right now. He had such a great game against Cerritos that he woke up with a scholarship offer from Purdue today. Teams are coming out to see this dude. I have to say, I've covered a lot of JC football over the last 12 years. He would be right up there with, I can think of maybe one or two other defensive ends that were just hell on the field.
Yeah.
Just nothing they can do with him. Had three sacks. I mean, they line him up all over the place. They line him up at outside linebacker. They line him up at defensive end. And he's incredible. He really is one of the best junior college players I've ever covered. I think he is a major star on Saturdays next year. And similar to the other one, I'd say Zion Bowens from Poly, who's a receiver for LBCC. These guys are just bawling out loud this year, and they're so much fun to cover.
The other college athlete of the week has to go to Alicia Laramie. Long Beach State women's soccer sophomore scored twice in 32 seconds at the 84th minute mark to help Long Beach State come back and beat Cal Poly 2-1 to get that conference victory on the road. A very important one as they come back to take on Cal State Fullerton at George Allen Field on Thursday night. But two goals, 32 seconds. There's a lot of things in this world that I've never done. Score twice in 32 seconds is one of them.
Well, you put the exclamation point on it that was crazy to me. It was like, that's 20% of the team's goal output for the entire – and, you know, Mauricio Gracia told you it's going to be a little bit of a struggle to score this year. But 20% of the whole season's goal output
in 32 seconds. It's pretty crazy. Got to shout out our athlete of the month, brought to you by Johnny B. Hair Care. Each month we give a Johnny B. Hair Care package and the Athlete of the Month award to somebody who's not only done, you know, something good once, but kind of has performed over the entire month. And this one was pretty easy.
Sophomore Adania Falmuina also has a lot of hair, by the way. So this is someone that will be happy to get the Johnny B. Hair Care package. But, yeah, she's the best volleyball player that I think is in the city right now, even as a 10th grader. I have no doubt that she'll go on to become the best Moore League volleyball product since Cynthia Barboza at Wilson, who got a chance to say hi to for a second last Friday at the Poly Wilson football game. She's something special. She had a triple-double against Lakewood in the first Moore League title tilt earlier this season, and I'm very excited to see what she does next week, too, because every time she steps on the floor, she gives me something I've probably never seen before.
She's special, man. Triple-double against your league rival to create a tie atop the league ladder is exactly what you want from your superstar. And she's a sophomore.
She's a 10th grader.
Incredible stuff. So, again, shout out Johnny B. Hair Care. Thank you for being the sponsor of our Athlete of the Month award. Obviously, we'll give that again next month. Moving on to our Game of the Week. It's actually Games of the Week, as the two oldest high schools in Long Beach enjoy homecoming.
Isn't that awesome?
It is really cool that it's on the same week. Yeah.
It just happens to fall on the same week. People forget because Wilson obviously is a historic high school in its own right, but St. Anthony actually founded 6 years before Wilson. So Pauley and St. Anthony hosting their homecomings the same night. You get the two oldest sports traditions in Long Beach because obviously this was 30 years before anyone was thinking about Long Beach State. This is before LBCC. So Pauley will be hosting their, I want to say it's the 112th homecoming game, and I believe St. Anthony's will be their 99th homecoming game.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Right down the street.
Yes.
Pauley's going to be at Vets, St. Anthony at Clark Field, so we probably will be able to hear the roars of each other's crowds while we're covering those games on Friday night.
Well, I got a kick out of it, too. The two campuses are exactly 1 mile apart. They both play off campus, and the stadiums they'll be playing in are both exactly 1 mile apart.
Pretty cool. One of the other schools that's right there in between Clark and Vets is Lakewood High School, where Travis D'Arnaud and Matt Duffy cut their baseball teeth as young Lancers. And it is so freaking cool that our players to watch over the week are the Lakewood Lancers, who are also the Tampa Bay Rays. Both Duffy and D'Arnaud are members of the Tampa Bay Rays, who are trying to knock out the Houston Astros in the playoffs this week. They won two games in Tampa on Monday and Tuesday, taking Wednesday off, going to Houston on Thursday to try to knock them off. Huge, right? But it's also incredible that these kids like actually have been huge parts of this series. Both of them had to wait their turn. Duffy with an injury, D'Arnaud being traded from the Mets to the Dodgers, then to the Rays. Duffy got in the game on Monday because of a foot injury to the starting third baseman.
Right.
Duffy coming off a foot injury as a third baseman, pretty crazy. Comes in, gets two hits. D'Arnaud last night, probably one of the biggest reasons why Tampa Bay was able to win that game on Tuesday. He had an RBI, a run, a hit. He got hit by a pitch, and then he made the tag on the incredible relay throw to get Altuve at the plate when the game was kind of still up in the air in the middle inning. So Travis D'Arnaud, Matt Duffy, Duffy obviously also a Long Beach State dirtbag, local boys in the show, in the playoffs. Seriously, Mike, of all the things that we cover, covering local guys playing playoff baseball on my television is the thing every year that makes me go, holy crap, my job's crazy.
Right, and it's just so much fun. And I would say that watching that game last night while I was laid up sick was a reminder of how fun baseball can be when you don't have a rooting interest other than that there's a couple guys you like. Because I'm super excited for that Game 5, not excited for the Dodgers Game 5.
This is true. This is true. We move on to our quote of the week. And this one comes from Bradley Critchfield, who is the LBCC media producer who's basically producing Redemption, a Last Chance U, Hard Knocks-type documentary series for LBCC football and head coach Brett Peabody. So I was talking to Bradley about getting the thing started because he doesn't usually do sports documentaries. He's doing the commercials.
He's just in the media department there.
If you've seen this commercials for LBCC on television, like the local charter channels, that's Bradley. He does those commercials. So now he's doing this docuseries for the football team. It's available right now on YouTube. There's actually a link to it in our College Corner story this week at Long Beach Post. And I was talking to him about being kind of nervous or afraid or, you know, having a little bit of trepidation walking into a football situation, a football world run by a guy who is super intense in Brett Peabody, a guy who says what he wants when he wants and stands by it, a guy who really, really, really does care about his kids and really, really does run a very good program over there at LBCC. But hey, man, as Bradley said, you know, in this day and age, people sometimes are looking to be offended, and it's very easy to find things to be offended in football. Football is a violent sport. It's an emotional sport. Things sometimes get a little out of control. And so I talked to Bradley about that and his kind of his mindset going into it, making sure he doesn't want to get anybody in trouble, but also making sure that he's out there, you know, telling the truth through a documentary.
Right, for sure. I mean, and that is a hard balance to walk, obviously, anywhere, but I think especially around football programs. My favorite thing, by the way, JJ, was when Brett Peabody told me that Brad was doing this documentary, he literally said, hey, did you hear we got our own Last Chance U?
The context matters, and I feel like that's what long form has the ability to do, to take it out of being a soundbite and give it context where he's really expressing ownership and responsibility for these young men who need that more than anything. So I feel like even if I do something that is a slip, I have the opportunity to elaborate, to explain, and put context around things. Again, it's more exciting than scary, I think.
Yeah.
Because it feels, I don't know, especially in today's climate, people are kind of looking to be offended. So, I don't know, there's a lot of opportunity to, show the more positive side to maybe guys who talk, you know, incorrectly or harshly or insensitive, but show that they're still good people and, you know, not everybody's mean and evil just because they talk a certain way.
Moving on to our list of the week. And let's stick with documentaries.
I just saw this, so you're going to need to do... Why don't you do your three, and then I will do my three. But this is good. This is a tough one.
It's tough because some of the best sports movies that you feel like are documentaries aren't, you know? Like, a lot of the Friday Night Lights-ishness of sports movies nowadays, everything is trying to feel like it's real, but it's actually not real. Like, you could just go through the 30 for 30s and find great sports documentaries.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that's easy. But I think if I'm going to say, of all the sports documentaries I've ever seen, which one had my attention or changed the way I looked at sports the most, it has to be that first Hard Knocks season on HBO that featured the Baltimore Ravens that went on to win that title with Ray Lewis and Tony Saragusa and just a team full of personality. And as a football fan, as a television watcher, as somebody who wanted to get into the business as a writer, watching them go behind the scenes and give us things that we had never seen before was thrilling. Like, the idea that you could do it, like, it was breaking the rules. Like, you can't be in the locker room. You can't show them drawing plays.
Right.
No one's allowed to see this stuff. And then it just broke all the rules when it came to, like, we wouldn't have Last Chance U without Hard Knocks. You know what I mean? Like, it opened up the doors to teams and organizations being open to that, to
yeah.
being completely transparent. And it was thrilling to me. Like, I rooted for the Ravens to go on and win that Super Bowl just because of watching them on Hard Knocks and feeling like, I don't know, I was part of their season.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to do. And what you and I both talked about when we started doing local sports coverage.
Yeah.
We were like, let's do the video and just call the highlight. Like, let's be the Dan and Keith. Let's be the Hard Knocks. Let's take all the things that we loved about sports and give them to Long Beach sports and stuff like this. Without Hard Knocks, man, maybe we're not doing that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's pretty crazy to think about that stuff.
Okay, what's your number two?
This is tough because I wanted to do a basketball one because basketball documentaries I think are amazing. I don't know why they're a little bit better than the other ones, but basketball just to me is like ripe for that type of storytelling, that long form type of storytelling.
Yeah.
So I had to go halfies. So I picked a 30 for 30 basketball one. Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks.
Yeah.
The story of Reggie Miller against basically Spike Lee and then also the New York Knicks in those playoffs, making, what was it, 7 points in friggin' four
yes,
seconds or
right.
whatever. The way they tell those stories and the way celebrity mashes into sports is fascinating to me. And I was watching that stuff live, so watching it as a replay was really cool. And then the Fab Five, the Michigan basketball story, you know, that I don't really need to go into details there, but watching
yeah.
that too was like a trip down memory lane, really.
Yeah.
Like
made
me feel like a kid again watching the Fab Five. And then my third one is I tried to think of one that wasn't all sports. Maybe one that was like kind of a sports one, but was much bigger issues. And it's got to be OJ Made in America. 8 hours long. They played it in the perfect time for everybody to just sit down and watch something together. It was a shared watching experience.
Yeah,
but
which we
sometimes
get
don't
once
get.
Once a year or something
yeah.
now, yeah. OJ Made in America would be on my top three as well.
It was.
I won't put it on my top three so that we're not repeating ourselves.
So incredibly intense and researched and well put together, and at no point did you feel like they were rushing or did it slow down. It had me on the edge of my seat for 8 hours, and at like some of the stuff I knew, some of the stuff I didn't know, but at no point was like, oh my gosh, I never knew that. So it was information I was aware of, and still I was riveted.
Right. Okay, here's my three. And there's a little bit of a thematic, like, push and pull on it, okay?
Okay.
So my first one is a little bit of a cheat in the way that you did, too. My first one is, like, basically the NFL Films,
yes,
like, archive.
Yes.
And my reason for saying
the
that
frozen
is,
tundra of
I think
Lambeau
similar
Field.
To what you and I do, like, people are fans of our YouTube channel. They very rarely does someone come up and say, that one thing you guys did was the best thing. Like, what people appreciate is the, like, perspective, right?
Right.
And the consistency of it. That's me with NFL Films. I could not tell you my favorite thing NFL Films has ever done, but I used to watch all 32 of the yearbooks that they would do to
yeah.
start the season. I used to watch, I've seen their documentaries on every single Super Bowl, and they all have that same kind of myth-making style, right?
Yep.
It's what Hard Knocks was the reaction to. It's the, like, you know, they had an orchestra. They had, like you said, the frozen tundra. Yeah. Like, they're all like war documentaries or something because
yes.
they're so grandiose. But to me, that was the first sports coverage I really, like, fell in love with as a kid because it just made everything feel so big. And I'd be watching games thinking about, I can't wait to see what this will look like in an NFL Films thing, you know?
Yeah, I think I watched so much NFL Films as a kid, I thought the first time I ran out of the tunnel as a football player, it was going to happen in slow motion.
Right. Yes, exactly. You were going to be doing the little
yeah.
hop. Yeah. So then my number two is the response to that because I grew up loving that kind of myth-making stuff. And then when I was in college and out of college, I went through the same thing everyone else did. I loved the grittier stuff, the long-form stuff. And my perfect response to that, since you took Hard Knocks, is Last Chance U. That is like, you think football is this big, amazing thing with the orchestras?
Yeah.
How about you go inside of a junior college dorm room in the South? You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, and you see, and because that's what we've seen in our lives is like take, for example, as we mentioned a few times, the Poly football program. That Poly Bosco game, did that feel like a movie?
Yeah.
Yes. Did the Poly Compton 99-9 game that I covered feel like a movie? No. Right? It was a terrible football game. But the interest
yeah.
level from fans is kind of similar. And I think only when you're actually covering these stories do you really see the both sides of that coin. And I like to think I'm not against myth-making sports coverage, and I'm not against gritty pulling the curtain back, showing that maybe someone's not as good a person as you thought.
Yeah.
Even though I think that, like, America was all the first one until, like, 1998 and then all the second one since then, I like both of them. I just think there's kind of, like, a time and a place for both of them.
Yeah.
And then the one that I would say I think actually does both those things, my basketball one would be Hoop Dreams. It's just, like, one of my favorite
yeah.
things I've ever seen ever.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. What is it about basketball that is so – you know what it is?
It's the right accessibility to the person as opposed to football.
But, yeah, in the same way that baseball has, like, here comes this moment, and then
yeah.
we can check in on seven different storylines tied into this one moment. Basketball has that a lot, too.
But it's more chaotic. Like, that's what I like – there's a certain kind of drama that I've grown to love on the, like, the Rays game last night, on the, like, this next pitch.
Yes.
But then with basketball, when you have, like, the potential game winning
yeah,
play,
the first
there's 10 people running around. You
the,
know
first,
what I mean?
The guy on first isn't going to steal the ball from the pitcher before he throws it.
Everyone gets their turn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's sort of the beauty of baseball. The beauty of basketball to me is that, like, chaos.
Go
that,
take
like,
your turn.
For sure.
Yeah. And take it again and again. And again,
yes.
and score 7 points in the last 9 seconds of an NBA playoff game. It's crazy.
This is not the only podcast we're producing as part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post. We also have our weekly news show called the Long Beach 30 that we've been doing for the last little while. You can get caught up on all the top news and politics stories in the city in just a half hour. Search Long Beach 30 wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Jason Ruiz joining us once again. Last time you were on the sports show, we were talking about the UCLA Bruins. We're talking about them again, but more as like a piece of a really forgettable sports weekend. You've had a few of those this fall.
I have, yeah. I mean, I don't forget them. I wish I could forget them. They're stored into my permanent memory.
So UCLA fan, Cowboy fan, we'll go one at a time.
No. What else? What else do you got? Do you
have Angels
any,
fan?
Angels
any,
fan. That's that season ended back in like April, May.
That's
what,
true. What else?
Yeah.
What else you got? You got anything else?
That's it. No, I don't have the heart.
You're not a Clippers
for
fan?
Hockey. No,
oh,
basketball.
Okay.
Do you know if you think Mike Trout should be the MVP, even though the team is horrible? Like, what do you think about the MVP award? I just wanted to ask.
Objectively, he is the best player in baseball.
Right? It shouldn't matter what your team's record is. Like, he doesn't also pitch.
Like, I don't think that the quarterback for whatever team makes it to the national championship game should win the Heisman Trophy. I don't think that Tom Brady should win, you know, the MVP because the Patriots are going to go 16-0 this year.
So it's truly the most valuable player, or is it the best player? Because I think what you're saying is it should be given to the best player no matter how valuable.
How bad would the Angels be without Mike Trout?
Way worse.
That there's value there.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so Saturday, UCLA Bruins football. I mean, just tailgating on the golf course surrounded by the Arroyo Seco Mountains is one of a kind. There's nothing else like that.
It's more one of a kind when you're there to do it with me.
That was a great time.
But that's the end of the good. That's the end of the good news.
I mean, that's the end of the good news for a lot of Bruins fans, for a lot of Bruin football seasons, right? Like, the tailgate is the highlight of the Saturday afternoon, because once you get into the Rose Bowl, it's hot, they don't sell beer, and the team's not good.
So let me cue this up really quick, and I'll talk while I do it. I discovered a Twitter account over the weekend. It's called The Last Time UCLA Was Good.
Ooh. Oh, God.
It's a running clock, and every day they just update the number. So last time.
Is this run by a bitter UCLA season ticket holder, or is this run by a USC fan?
No, that's got it. That kind of self-hatred can only come from a UCLA fan.
Yeah, that's fair.
I feel confident in that, because I know, like, when the Niners are bad, no one's making more fun of them than we are. You know what I mean?
That is true. Nobody hits my younger brother but me.
That's right.
But, yeah, it has been a while. I think they've gone through four coaches since, quote-unquote, UCLA football was good.
Well, I mean, what are we considering good? We're talking, like, Rose Bowl, right? So that was Bob Toledo.
Yes, that's Toledo. So you've Toledo. Got Durrell.
Durrell.
Neuheisel.
Neuheisel. Mora.
And Kelly. So four.
But let's not forget the dude that was waving the towel on the sidelines, the special teams coach, the rally coordinator. He did get an official coach.
You're right.
I guess.
He got a start.
Yes,
he got an appearance on the sideline.
And he's 1-0, dude. I think he beat New Mexico in the Vegas Bowl.
So when you're watching your team play very poorly and you are in the building, mm-hmm. do you boo?
Yes.
Have you always booed?
Yes.
And when you do it, do you feel like it's making a difference, or do you feel like you're just, you know, expelling your own demons out of your mouth?
Well, it's more than demons. okay, so I should clarify, like, last time when we were talking. So I'm not booing the kids. Right. I'm booing the coaching staff. I'm booing the athletic director who is thankfully retiring next year that hired all these people.
Asterisk sign so that the kids know that, or how do you distinguish it for them?
Well, I mean, if I was booing in 2014 and I'm booing in 2019, I'm clearly not booing Austin Burton. You know, I'm not booing DTR. I'm booing Chip Kelly for not being able to or any other coach on the team for this matter for being able to develop these kids.
But I mean, shouldn't you be booing the university at this point for not being able to put enough support behind the right coach to have a good football program?
How much more support does he need?
I was just gonna say what are they not supporting?
What does UCLA have, or what does Oregon State have that UCLA doesn't? What does Cincinnati have that UCLA football doesn't?
What does San Diego State have that UCLA football
And those are
doesn't?
All three teams that beat them this year.
What does Oregon have that UCLA doesn't with
Nike?
Chip Kelly? I mean, is that it then? It's just financial backing?
Well, this
but
is,
that's one school.
Right. And as this car wreck has continued to unfold,
I'm just saying the school is more of a constant than the coaching staff. You just named four sets of coaching staffs that have failed, right?
Right. But, I mean, they didn't have the Casey Wasserman Football Center up until 2 years ago. Like, they have started to invest in this football program, like, hundreds of millions of dollars. And now they have Under Armour money. You know, and they have the largest, outside of Oregon, which I don't even know if they pay for all of that Nike stuff. Outside of Oregon, they have the single richest contract with an athletic apparel provider in the country, bigger than Alabama.
But investing, I mean, listen, let's go nitty gritty on college sports. Investing in a program and standing behind it is more than just securing a lucrative apparel deal, right? I mean, when Cal wanted to be good.
But that's step one.
When Cal wanted to be good, Cal relaxed their admission standards for the football team. If UCLA wants to be good, like, are you going to go get some players or what's up?
You know, I remember that year. I remember DeSean Jackson and Marshawn Lynch were Listen, probably going to UCLA, and then ended up at Cal.
And my little brother was a teammate of Deshaun Jackson's. My little brother also got into Cal. I will tell you that he had a very different GPA than Deshaun Jackson. So I'm saying, do you want players, or do you want to be UCLA and be the also-ran team?
Notre Dame did the same thing. College football fans remember the year Notre Dame decided that they wanted to be competitive again. It was a massive shift in the country's power struggle.
It's pretty obvious when that's happening, in my opinion. I'm just saying I don't see that at UCLA, despite the fact that they are building nice buildings and practice facilities and that they have money.
As someone who was rejected from UCLA, I am all in favor of lowering the standards to try to get into that school. I will reapply.
Do you feel a different level or passion in your fandom when it comes to your professional team, the Cowboys, as opposed to your college team? Like, do you have more college passion for the college team?
Yeah, I'm actually a bigger Bruins fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you watch the Cowboys...
So it hurts more.
You're watching it on television. Have you ever been to a Cowboys game?
Yeah, I've been to a Cowboys game. I went the year that they opened up the new stadium.
Oh, damn. Okay, yeah. That's cool.
Got a commemorative shirt and everything.
Do you boo?
Yes, from my couch. Yeah. I stand for the national anthem at the beginning of the game, and I boo. Loud enough for Jason Garrett to hear me.
Well, he's clapping at the time, so you're going to have to be really loud.
A little bit
for
louder.
To hear you.
Yeah. You're like being clear. You're like, I'm not booing Ezekiel Elliott. I'm booing Jerry Jones.
Right. But it's a very it's all in the pitch. It's the pitch of the boo. They have different. You know, they it's audible.
But the loyal level is the same, or you think your loyalty is a little bit higher for UCLA?
It's higher for UCLA.
Okay.
I've liked both teams since I was old enough to understand it. So 5.
Yeah.
And yeah, Cowboys have arguably had more success, but I'm more loyal to the Bruins.
Okay.
Look at me. I'm a season ticket holder, man. I've been going. This is in terms of like a 10-year stretch, 15, 20-year stretch. It's bad. But I keep showing up.
Yeah, you do. You are a glutton for punishment.
You're the reason they don't have to make it better.
My wife, my now wife, when she first met me, one of her first questions to me was, why do all of the teams that you like suck? And that that thing has been just bouncing around inside of me.
Should be the name of the reason Jason's on the show, not just for us to make fun of him, but also to plug his new column at lbpost.com.
Which should have been called.
It should have been called, Why Do Your Team Suck?
Yeah. What is it called now?
I don't know. It's your column, dude.
Oh, we have to give it a name?
Yeah. Wait, it has a name.
We're great at naming things. So give it to us for 5 minutes. We'll figure it out.
It was Jason's
Horrible Sports Weekend.
No good, horrible sports weekend.
That's going to be the title every weekend. You're just going to corner your teams and just be like, you guys are now going to be horrible. I think the Cowboys could win their division.
And they did too, up until 2 weeks ago, you know?
But I do. That was my other question to you. Yeah. So there's. It doesn't have a recurring title. Then it's just going to be you.
We're going to give it a recurring title.
We don't know where this thing is going. So pretty much what happened is now that we're plugging the column, which has gotten positive support. I mean, it's like when I watch Cops, right? I watch Cops because I'm like, man, there are people whose lives are worse than mine. I think people got enjoyment of reading this because they're like, dude. Like, Jason, Saturdays and Sundays
suck. I might be a Cowboys
fan,
but at least I'm not also a UCLA fan or
vice versa. And I've gotten some, like, people reaching out. Like, this morning I got a tweet, and this guy was like, oh, I'm an Illinois football fan, and also I think he may have liked somebody else that got eliminated in the playoffs. Yeah, I don't know. It's going. Steve, our sports, is he sports editor now?
Culture editor, whatever.
I don't know. He sits across from me. He emailed me on Monday and he said, hey, you know, it'd be really funny if you started doing this, like writing about how much your team suck. And I said, okay. So I sat down and I just kind of blacked out and let my emotions fly for, you know, 45 to 50 minutes, sent it over, and that's what went up on the internet.
Well, there's no doubt your sports weekend coming up is also going to be a bit painful. You're going to be running in the half marathon, correct?
It is going to be... Oh, yeah.
Did I just remind him?
Yeah. Uh-oh. No. I got some miles in. I got some miles in yesterday, and right now I'm wearing my brand new shoes that I'm breaking in for Sunday.
Smart.
How
many miles did you just get in? What's your longest run before you do it?
I did 4 before the city council meeting last night.
Okay.
I've done 7 is my high.
Okay.
So it's not – I've done 2 full marathons, so I know what my body's capable of. Granted, that was like 35 pounds ago. But it's fine. I'm not sore today. I wasn't sore after doing 7. So I'm optimistic that, you know – I'm hoping that the half marathon is going to be the most painful part of my Sunday, because if the Jets beat the Cowboys, I don't know what we're going to be talking
Darnold's
about next
back,
week.
Darnold's back.
You might, yeah, you might be talking about. I end up in the crime report, you know.
Yeah, we're gonna check on you on Sunday, bud. Godspeed. That's it. That's all there ain't no more. But before we wrap up this episode of What Up Long Beach, we're doing our non-sports recommendations. Mine is go rewatch New Girl. If you've never seen it, go watch New Girl. But go rewatch it if you haven't seen it in a long time. The first three seasons of New Girl is wildly entertaining and the perfect thing to have on in the background of whatever you're doing, because everything everyone says in those first three seasons is just gold. I gotta shout out my guy, Nick Miller, Jake Johnson. he's my absolute favorite. There's one episode where he's really struggling with life and he goes to the park and he just talks to this old man, and the old man doesn't say anything. And Nick just keeps talking. Uh-huh. It's therapeutic for me to watch that. Go watch New Girl if you've never seen it before.
I like that. You gave me the assignment of, since what I'm doing with all my free time right now is watching old horror movies, you gave me the assignment of breaking down my top horror movies.
That's right. Top four, because we've got three more episodes after this until Halloween.
So I watch Halloween every year, the original John Carpenter movie. And I actually think, outside of being a horror movie, I think that's like a perfect movie. Like,
interesting.
It's like, it's one of the few movies that like I could actually break down the cinematography and like all the decisions that were made on every scene. And I've listened to every commentary and every podcast and every long form thing or whatever. But I was going to shout out, did you see the new Halloween movie that came out last year?
No.
Are you aware that Danny McBride wrote that movie?
What?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm definitely watching it now.
It's really, really good. I actually think it's one of the – it does the jump from the 1970 movie to now better than any other like remake I've seen. I really think it's an incredible movie. It's funny. It's much funnier than you would expect it to
be. Well, it's my guy DM.
But it's the Danny McBride thing where it's like there's two cops in the movie that are just like bit characters. And you know that someone's going to come squish their heads in or whatever. But they're funny. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so they feel it, everything feels better because everyone feels like a real person.
Yes.
Yeah. I really recommend it.
Do you think that the Halloween franchise is the most influential, quote unquote, horror movie franchise? Yeah,
because they're the ones that started. I mean, like you could say like the Universal monster movies that like really started everything and, you know, were arguably some of the most culturally significant creations in like American fiction. But Halloween started.
It started making the soundtrack
of
character.
Slasher stuff. It started that kind
of
soundtrack.
Like, all of a sudden, soundtracks were important.
Right.
It was also the, like, damsel in distress, but she fights back now.
Yeah.
That was the first one.
But also
like,
the girl
gets naked in the lake, isn't immediately dead. She can punch him.
But it's also the only the virgin survive thing, which John Carpenter has said he has, like, enormous regrets about, that people came and made these movies because he's like, that wasn't his intention in doing that.
Right.
It was meant to be more of a dramatic irony that the quiet person fights back.
You know you're influential when you're not trying to be influential and you're still influential.
But here's a couple of things I would point out that are I would say so the most influential. Here's a couple of things I'd point out from having read way too much about this movie. I think that people think of horror movies as being sexist because I think that they have been for much of the like Scream Queen era from Halloween till now.
Agreed.
Jamie Lee Curtis said the reason she took that job, you probably know her mom was Janet Leigh from Psycho, right? The reason she took that job was because it was actually the only role she got that allowed her to really act as a young actress, where she could be happy, she could be like comfortable, she could be motherly
to
these
kids,
she could be scared, she could be screaming, right? So like that actually was what appealed to her about, which I thought was really fascinating. And then the other thing is that John Carpenter has said that like he basically considers it a movie about racism. Like he grew up in Kentucky in the suburbs. And what he saw all around him were all of these nice people who are also smiling and kind, who then, like, in his town, you know, a black guy was, like, dragged to death behind a car when he was a kid. And these same nice-seeming, smiling people, as it turned out, had this, like, darkness underneath them. And that, like, that was kind of the thing that fascinated him and that he wanted to explore is, like, how can there be evil underneath these seemingly pleasant streets? Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great start.
All right.
Incredible start. I knew that was going to be on there, so I'm glad we knocked it off. So I'm really unsure as to what the next three are going to be, but make sure you come back and find out Mike's top three horror movies of all time. Next week on another episode of What Up Long Beach, when we're going to be, you know, saying What Up Long Beach and talking about local sports like we do all the time. So for everybody at both websites, thank you so much for listening. be good, and have fun.